Welcome to Section 9. My name is Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today's show is going to be about vulnerability scanning with OpenVAS. Why do we need vulnerability scanning? Implementing OpenVAS and lessons learned. So first of all, why don't you explain what a vulnerability is?
So a vulnerability is a weakness within an operating system or an application or a device. And that's how hackers get in. That's how they get their, you know, malware in there, or they find some way into the system.
So then why do we need vulnerability scanning?
So the vulnerability scanner is kind of like your antivirus software. There's a database of vulnerabilities within the vulnerability scanner. So when you run that against your system or a host on the network someplace, it's going to search for those vulnerabilities that it has within its database. And that's going to tell you what vulnerabilities are going to be on that system or are on that system.
So how is this database compiled? I mean, who compiles it? How does it come about?
So this is the one we get from OpenVAS, because in this case, we're talking about OpenVAS.
Okay.
But then you have things like Nessus and Nexpose. Those are commercial vulnerability scanners, and they work really well. In our case, we're a little poor. We don't have enough money for those scanners. And OpenVAS is way better than having no vulnerability scanner at all. So again, it works like antivirus software. It has to know about these vulnerabilities before it can find them.
Okay, so we know what a vulnerability is. We know why we need to scan for them. How do we get rid of them?
So we talk about patch management, and that's how you get rid of some of these vulnerabilities. Now, one of the things that I think is really important to understand here is when you do patch management, that's not going to get rid of all the vulnerabilities. And that's another reason why you have to have a vulnerability scanner, or you should have one. So you have vulnerabilities on a system. How do you know they're there? You run a vulnerability scan with your vulnerability scanner. If you are using patch management, that's going to eliminate a lot of the vulnerabilities that you do have within the operating system and your third-party applications and your devices. But you still need to see what's left, because some vulnerabilities don't have a patch. There isn't one.
So I guess that's what I wanted to ask you about. So, you know, you can get rid of some of them by patching the system, and then you run another scan. So you run one first to see what they are. Then you get rid of them by doing your patch management, and then you run another scan. Is that how you do it?
I would recommend running another scan. So the recommendation from the Center for Internet Security is to do a weekly scan. And your weekly scan is good, because what you're going to do is you may say, okay, we want to check and see what's going on week by week. And then if you do a patch and you say, okay, I did a patch. How did my patch do? Did it get applied properly? Did it get installed? Did the patches I think are part of the process get installed?
But how do you know this is that it has been installed? Because I guess what I'm thinking is, you know, you do your vulnerability scanning, you do your patch. If you run another scan, then if that patch or if that problem, that vulnerability does not come up, then that means that your patch was installed correctly. Is that how you determine that? Or do you go somewhere to see if the patch was installed and if it actually worked?
So you may have a third-party patch management software that can tell you whether or not the patch was installed properly. But sometimes you're going to be in a situation where your patch management software doesn't really give you a whole lot of information. So for example, you do a Windows update. What gets installed with Windows update? Windows is typically kind of fuzzy about what gets installed when you do your updates, what patches are applied. It doesn't really tell you. You just get a bunch of stuff. So when you run your vulnerability scanner against your Windows system, that's going to tell you what vulnerabilities you do have. And then you can begin to decide, okay, here's my vulnerabilities. Is there a patch for that? Let's go find out. And if there is one, well, how come it never got installed when we did our patch management at the end of the month?
Right. So what happens then for those that you don't have a patch for? How do you get rid of those?
So those are things that you're never going to be able to get rid of, because you're just waiting for a patch to be applied. And then there are going to be some things in there, and this is where I have to learn how to use the vulnerability scanner, because it may say, okay, this particular service is a vulnerability. Maybe you shouldn't have it on there. So those are some things that we're going to have to take a look at and figure those out for ourselves. Because the vulnerability scanner may say, well, this service is not secure. You shouldn't be using it. It's red. Red meaning critical. You should deal with this. But you may have other vulnerabilities that you just can't get rid of. For whatever reason, it's there. There's no patch. You can't get rid of it. How do you deal with that? And the way our network is designed is a great example of how we can use those VLANs and subnets to help us. So for example, I went ahead and did a basic scan of our Synology disk station. Came back red. Bunch of red stuff in there. So I haven't done my homework yet in determining what the red actually means. I have to do some research on that. But there are some services there that we may not be able to get rid of. And there may not be a patch for that. Because here we have a third-party device with their own updates. I have to get them from Synology. So what do we do with these vulnerabilities that are red? Well, what we can do, if there's no patch for that, we can't fix that. We can say, okay, who needs access to that? And let's make sure only those people who need access get access. So for example, we have our Wi-Fi for the production side of the network. Maybe they don't need access to some of these services. We can block that because we can say, okay, if you're coming from subnet A going to subnet B, don't allow this particular port. Don't allow this particular service.
So let's say, for example, you know, we have SSH port 22, right? Let's say that that's one of the vulnerabilities and there's no patch for it. Can you still have SSH but change the port number? Will that protect you or will the hacker be able to get through it anyway?
It depends on how you use that particular service. So in that case where you have a service, you say, okay, we need that. Well, then you have to say, okay, who needs that? Maybe we say, okay, if you want to SSH into our Synology disk station, what you're going to do is you're going to say, you have to be on the wired network, no Wi-Fi. So the Wi-Fi subnets that we have, block those from accessing SSH.
What if I want to access remote, I'm not in the office?
That's a different situation because now you're on the VPN side of things.
Oh, okay.
So you're VPNing in, you have access to the Synology disk station. Do you really need SSH? If you say yes, then that's something we have to visit. And then we're going to have to determine how we handle that. So there are things you can do based on what you have with your network design that can help you mitigate the risk. So you have the vulnerability. Now you have to figure out, is there a patch? No patch. Okay, fine. We have a vulnerability here. We can't patch that. And then you can begin to figure out what kinds of security controls can we implement to minimize the risk.
Right.
So again, we're going to allow and deny based on who needs access. The Wi-Fi is kind of scary because if a hacker tries to get into the network, they could potentially do that through Wi-Fi. If they do get in, they'll have SSH access to our Synology disk station. Let's block that.
Right. But I mean, if you do your Wi-Fi or your wireless on a different network, then you wouldn't have to worry about that because then they wouldn't have access to the network, correct? They can have its own subnet.
It has its own subnet, but they may have access to the Synology disk station.
Why?
You have to configure the network to deny access from the Wi-Fi subnet to the Synology disk station.
Okay.
And the reason we can do that is because we do have separate subnets. So I can go into our Meraki and I can say, okay, SSH traffic from the Wi-Fi network to the Synology disk station, deny. You can do that.
No, nice.
And the only reason we can do that, or one reason we can do that, is because we have two separate subnets. If we didn't have that, it would be more difficult to try to figure out how we were going to do that.
Okay, so you have chosen OpenVAS as a vulnerability scanning tool to kind of do your homework on and do it. How did you implement this?
So first you have to install it. And so I went to the internet, did some searching, and found a couple of instructions, which we're going to put in our show notes so people can take a look at that.
Okay.
And it has very good step-by-step instructions. And overall, it wasn't that big a deal to install OpenVAS. You know, you type in the commands, you do some waiting, and you're good. there are some things I had to do to sort of set this up. So I had to add in some software, and there was a tool to do that, which I'd never seen before. So they have add-apt-repository, and this is a tool that helps you add in a repository for OpenVAS, because there may be applications that are not provided by the Ubuntu official community, and you can't get it from the repositories you have within apt. And so you have to add another one. And for some of the stuff that you've done, you've seen that where you have to add in other sources of software, where you get your software from,
right,
to be able to download that stuff. And you have to add in keys and all that.
Right.
And I think this tool kind of simplifies that process. So I thought that was interesting. There is some prerequisite stuff before you get to OpenVAS. So once you put the prerequisites in there, it tells you you can now do apt install OpenVAS 9.
Okay.
And when you do that, one of the things that I kind of was a little worried about, I'm installing this on our Gigabyte server.
Okay.
So, you know, when you do your apt install for anything, it says, okay, here's a list of applications we're going to install, because it's the application you want plus all of the dependencies, right? All the extra stuff you need. So in this case, the extra stuff was huge. I mean, there was this huge long list of stuff. First thing that pops into my mind, this is a physical server. If I make a mistake and I install something that sort of conflicts with what we already have on there, because our Gigabyte server has our wiki on there, it has our ITOP on there, it does our DNS. So if we damage the system by introducing applications or software that conflicts with other things on the system, that's not going to be good. We're going to have a hard time.
We're not going to be able to use it.
You know, we're not going to be able to use it, and we're going to have a hard time backing out, especially when you have applications that you install where there's a huge list of dependencies. That's always a risk.
So you didn't back it up before you did this?
No, I didn't. And that's my big mistake. If something had gone wrong, there would have been no way for me to go back to a working copy.
Okay, so I thought we decided that before we did anything, we were going to back things up or do a snapshot or do whatever we needed to do.
So that's another issue we're going to have, is how do we back up a physical box, like your workstation or right. Gigabyte server? My own laptop doesn't have a backup. So one of the things we're going to have to look at is possibly using something, what is that software called? It's kind of like Ghost, and I can't remember it off the top of my mind, but there is an application or software that we can use.
Clonezilla?
Clonezilla, that's the one. And we've used that in the past.
Right.
But that's something that we're going to have to take a look at. Now, the downside to our situation here with Clonezilla is that once you get an image of the system, how do you test it to make sure it works? So that's something we're going to have to try and figure out.
We can test it on one of our virtual machines.
There may be a way to do a snapshot with Clonezilla of our Gigabyte server.
Right.
And then pipe that into a virtual machine to see if it actually works.
Yeah, we can put a server in there and see if, you know.
I don't know how that works.
Okay.
So, you know, because you're going from physical to virtual. And I'm not entirely sure what happens there. It may work just fine, but I've never actually tried that. So that's something we'll have to take into consideration.
Yeah, I think we need to have a plan for the backup. You know, like I said, the DigitalOcean one, that's easy because you can do your snapshot and you're happy. Same thing with VMware, correct?
VMware, your what do you call that, VirtualBox that you
right.
have, you can take a snapshot, which is why everybody loves virtualization, because you can do that. With our physical system, it's a little bit more difficult.
Can we actually back it up on an external hard drive?
Well, that's how you're going to do that with Clonezilla. You may have an external hard drive connected, and then when you do your Clonezilla, you'll just tell it, copy it to this USB drive.
But you cannot test it. Would it tell you if it was successful?
It will tell you if it was successful, but that doesn't mean that it's operational.
Hmm.
It just tells you that it copied successfully.
Got it.
It doesn't mean that when you try to put it back, it's going to work.
Okay.
So that's something that we're
going to have to do some research on that.
Yeah, we're going to have to do some research on that, and we'll have to find a way to test it. So once you have it installed, then you have to begin configuring OpenVAS. So again, the basic installation is not too difficult. I should point out that when I did the installation, one of the things that you have to remember is that it works like antivirus software. And what that means is you have to download the vulnerability database and set it up so the system can use it.
But I thought that's what you said that was on the repository. Because when we did that one time, on I don't even remember what it was, but we had to download not just the application, but the repository with everything that it needed to do what it needed to do. I think that was part of it, right?
So in this case, the repository is just to get the application. It's just to get OpenVAS. Once OpenVAS is installed, OpenVAS has to get its update for the vulnerabilities. So OpenVAS is installed from the PPA or the repository, and now you have to tell it to get the new vulnerability database, update yourself. As you do the installation of OpenVAS 9, it does that, and it has to rebuild the cache. And what kind of confused me is the system kind of froze at 88%, and it sat there, and I'm thinking, it's not working. And it took like 20 minutes, and all of a sudden it just went 100%, moved on. So that was a little confusing, because in the instructions I was using, it didn't say anything about that. So that takes a while. And then once you're done, it has you, you know, the instructions tell you to do a bunch of other stuff to set it up. And then you can log into OpenVAS's web interface. And then you can begin to create your tasks and your scans, and you tell it what you want to scan. And you can also set it up to automatically scan on a schedule. So that's something we're going to want to take a look at, because we want to do this weekly, or we may do it every other week. Depends on how you want to use your vulnerability scanner. Again, the Center for Internet Security recommends you do it weekly. That way you know what vulnerabilities you have. If there are any new ones, you're going to see those weekly.
So we do our patches monthly and then our vulnerability scans weekly.
And that's something we're going to have to figure out. In a larger organization, weekly makes sense. In our case, it may not.
Right.
Because we do our patch management end of the week. And so if we do a weekly scan and we see changes over the week, we don't get to that until end of the month. And then if we see something major, we may want to patch earlier.
Right.
But that's a lot of work to try to do that. So, you know, because we're small, we may have to make adjustments to that. As long as we have some scans that we're doing at least monthly, if not every other week, that gives us an idea of what are we missing? What vulnerabilities do we have? How secure are we really?
So what you want to do is do the vulnerability scan before we patch, and then another one?
That's a way to see whether or not patching has fixed some of the issues you have on your systems. So that's a good thing, and that's something we're going to want to test.
Okay.
And the other thing you have to remember, again, I go back to that antivirus software. You have to keep your antivirus software up to date. And so you typically have it automatically update every so often, right? With OpenVAS, there are some commands you need to type in to update and rebuild the database. So you're going to download from the feeds the new information for the vulnerabilities, and then you rebuild your database. So that's something that we may want to have automated, so that when we go to scan something on a schedule, we know that, okay, if we are scanning every Friday, then we need to update the database before the scan.
Right.
So that's something that we're going to have to make sure that we do on a regular basis.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
You know, like I said, the initial update and rebuilding of the database, that took forever. But once it's up to date and you keep it up to date, then future updates and rebuilds of the database don't take so long.
So in addition to our checklist and everything else that we're doing, the documentation, I think we should have a schedule for scanning and patches and things that we need to do, a maintenance schedule per se for the network. What do you think?
Yeah, we're going to have something like that.
Okay.
Because if we don't, then it's kind of like what we had before, where everything is just random.
Right.
And as we begin to use these tools, we're going to learn something from that, and then we're going to say, okay, the tool works this way. I'm seeing this. Okay, maybe we do a scan once a month, or maybe we do a scan every other week, or maybe we do once a week. We're going to learn something from using the tool, and that's going to tell us how often we want to scan and whatever else we want to do with that. But until we use it, we're going to be kind of guessing at this point.
Right. No, that makes sense. And like I said, before we're using anything, you know, even before we do some of the different things that we're doing, we're updating the system to be able to make sure that we have the latest on it. So
right. And then one thing I should point out here that goes along with configuring OpenVAS is authenticated scans. So you can have a scan where you scan from the outside, right? I have my Synology disk station. I scan the outside of the system, and whatever OpenVAS can see, it will tell you what the vulnerabilities are. You can also have OpenVAS authenticate with the system. So it's going to log into our Synology disk station and then do the scan from inside the system.
Okay.
And that's a better way of seeing what you have because it can see more things on the system. It's not looking outside in, it's inside the system and trying to figure out, okay, what's all on here and what are the vulnerabilities within the system? It can see more, so you get a better picture.
Huh. I never thought that it could do that.
So once we have some of that figured out, one of the things I would really want to do here is use OpenVAS to scan our DigitalOcean servers. And in order to do that, we're going to have authenticated scans.
So then the scan kind of goes, knock, knock, I'm here to scan the system, you know, and then it has to authenticate before it can actually do the scan.
Right. And it's just logging in with a username and password type of thing.
No, I get what you're saying is that for some reason I'm sitting in there, it's like we're inside the network. How much more inside we can? I wasn't making the connection, you know, for that.
That's something we're going to have to figure out because how do you do that with our DigitalOcean servers?
Mm-hmm.
We may have to go to SSH keys and do it that way because then you don't have to worry about somebody trying to figure out usernames and passwords for things like this.
Did we ever set the SSH keys on our DigitalOcean? I don't think we did that.
No, we didn't do that.
So maybe we need to do that. Because I know you said, well, you know, we'll just do those later. And then, you know, when we first got started with them.
And now that you're managing our passwords and user accounts and all of that, you can also manage keys within KeePass. So that's, again, something we want to do so that we have access to our system, you know, based on our keys and all of that. So it's an extra layer of security. It works really well. Lots of people recommend it. But we're going to have to figure out how to do that. And then how do we manage all of that?
Right.
So that we have access to our cloud servers. And then we can use OpenVAS to do an authenticated scan against our servers so we can see how secure are we really? What kind of vulnerabilities do we have on these systems?
Mm. So lessons learned.
So one of the big things here is that when you're thinking about vulnerabilities, you need a tool that tells you the vulnerabilities you have on your systems. Just because you do things like patches or updates doesn't mean you don't have any vulnerabilities. There may be vulnerabilities there that don't have any patch. And there may be vulnerabilities there that you can patch, but the standard way of patching doesn't work. Like with WannaCry, you had Server 2008, you had to manually install the patch. You can't just use Windows Update to get that. For that particular vulnerability, you have to manually install it. So that's something that a vulnerability scanner is going to tell you, hey, you still have these vulnerabilities here. You need to do something about that. So that's one thing. And then you need to do authenticated scans with your vulnerability scanner. So you get a better picture of what's really going on with your systems. And you can do that with OpenVAS, with Nessus, with Nexpose. They all do that.
Well, and you're making sure that it is you scanning your system, not somebody else.
Well, the big thing there is that you're not scanning from the outside because the outside is only going to give you a limited view of what's on the system. There may be other vulnerabilities in there that
you can't see because, you know, you're outside doing the scan.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, so I never thought about that when we were doing Nmap and all of that.
I never thought about that either until I started thinking about vulnerability scanners because Nmap is not something you can use inside the system. It's outside.
No, that's what I was saying. It's like, you know, it's a tool we use to get certain information from our network and see where our devices are and what it is and that we're doing. And, you know, when you were saying, oh, you scan from the inside, that's why I got confused because it was like, Well, how do you do that? I mean, I understood what authentication is. I know that that means you have to go somewhere and authenticate before you can get in. But I never knew that a vulnerability scan can actually do that.
Yeah, so that's one thing we have to figure out how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else do I have here on my list?
What is the sync the feeds?
That's the one where we were syncing the feeds where you have to update it like an antivirus software.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... So again, this goes back to what I was saying earlier. The last thing I want to cover here is how do you take what the vulnerability scanner says and use that to make you more secure? You know, it's giving you some information. Patching is really good. Patching is going to get rid of some of these vulnerabilities. But then you also have to think about some of these services you may have on a system that aren't very secure. And that's where we talked about the extra controls you might add, you know, not allowing Wi-Fi to access SSH, not allowing certain subnets to access certain services on specific devices. Those are some things you can do to make things more secure. And you can do that based on what you have within your vulnerability scans, that information you get back from that.
I just have to wonder, I keep thinking of the Target hack, because, you know, you told me that they were getting emails or messages or alerts. But if you cannot read what it is, you know, like with OpenVAS, you're getting all this red stuff. If you don't understand what it means, how are you going to be able to protect against it? You know, and I'm thinking how much of that was on that Target hack that whoever was looking at those alerts didn't know what to do or didn't know what they meant. And that's why they kept ignoring them. So, you know, I'd be curious to see how you do the research to find out what all that red stuff is that we got on our Synology.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting because, again, that's the part I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Setting it up, doing an initial scan, that's easy. Figuring out what it all means, that's going to be tough. And just because we have red in a vulnerability scan against our Synology disk station, that doesn't mean that Synology devices are insecure and you shouldn't use them.
Right.
It just means that, okay, we have some red, we have to do some research there, and there may be other things we have to do to make this thing more secure.
Right. Well, you know, it is what it is. We have more to learn. You know, we don't claim to know everything. We just kind of look at it. Some of it we're going to know and it's really cool. And other stuff like this, you know, we're going to have to look at what the red in our Synology is, try to figure out what it means, so we can try to apply the security to it.
Yeah, and that's going to help us when we get to scanning other things like our cloud servers.
It's the nature of IT, you know. Some things you'll know, other stuff you have to research. What do, you know?
Yeah, so that's it for our vulnerability scanning stuff. I think we have a lot to learn. It's going to be interesting, a lot of homework to do. But now what we can do too is we can use this to scan some of your other devices. Now that we have it on an actual server that we're going to keep, and we're not going to, you know, it's not a virtual machine for testing. This is our Gigabyte server. We're going to be using this on a regular basis. So now we can scan some of our other devices, like your Raspberry Pi, your workstation, some of your other devices that you have. We can check and see what is the security of these different things.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how much more information we get on the inside scan.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Are we going to do an outside one and then an inside one?
We can do that and we can see, okay, is there a difference here? We can do that on our Synology disk station.
Yeah.
We can do that with our cloud servers. We can say, okay, let's scan from the outside. Now let's scan from the inside and see, hey, are these two things different?
Right. Nothing, I'll be curious. I just want to see what the big difference is.
Yeah. So do you have anything else?
No, you?
No, I think that's it. If you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us. And if you want to send us some email. You can,
long day.
You can send it to info@section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.